This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. It's Zoomer Radio's Theater of the Mind with Frank Proctor. Open your mind as we fill your head with amazing thrills, chills, and laughs. Theater of the Mind, the best love programs from radio's golden age, only on Zoomer Radio. Now, here is your master storyteller, Frank Proctor.
Well, thank you, and welcome to the show. I hope you're fully recovered from your Canada Day celebrations and are ready to give your attention to one of the finest radio shows of the golden age of radio. We take you back to 1947, when some of the most popular shows were The Amazing Mr. Malone, which debuted on ABC, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, debuting on NBC, and a program we feature tonight, which premiered on CBS, that program, Escape. And tonight's episode is entitled Confession.
You are lost in a London fog, uncertain whether the figures looming around you are real or creatures of your imagination. And somewhere in the wet grayness lurks a murderer from whom you must escape.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Tonight, we escape to a fog-shrouded city and the terror of a shell-shocked mind, as Algernon Blackwood describes them in his ghostly story, Confession.
There was no doubt about it. The woman was dead. Her cheek was cold to my touch. The head of the long, sharp hatpin protruded from her breast above the heart. She was dead. Murdered. And I stood there by the bed, my brain whirling crazily. I was alone in an empty house with a murdered woman. And then suddenly fear flashed across my brain and cleared it. I heard the door below open and close. Footsteps. Someone was coming across the downstairs hall, onto the stairs, coming up, here. In a moment, I would be discovered. In a moment, someone would walk into this room and see me standing over the body. In a moment, my escape would be cut off. Quickly, I slipped across the hall and into another of the empty bedrooms. I leaned against the closed door, breathing heavily, listening to those steps come closer. Would he look into any of the other bedrooms first? Would I be discovered here? He passed my door and went into the room, straight in, closed the door behind him. Then he knew where to come. I waited a moment, waited for some sound, some gasp of discovery. There was none. Then he knew what to expect. I must escape quickly before he came out of that room. I started down the stairs, carefully, to avoid any sound. And suddenly the door of that room opened. The beam of a flashlight searched down the hall. I took the stairs three at a time, burst open the front door, and fled into the street, fled into the sanctuary of the fog. How long and how far I ran, I do not know. I could see nothing, feel nothing but the clammy dampness of the fog. I don't know whether he was still following me or not. I ran out of sheer terror, up one street, down another, with no idea of where I was or where I was going. Perhaps I was running in circles. Perhaps I would run right back to the house. Well, I stopped. I leaned heavily against the wall. My hands were shaking as I raised them to my perspiring face. I held them there to steady them, ran them through my wet hair. My hat. I didn't have it. I'd left my hat back there in that room, on the bed beside that dead woman. and it had my initials in it.
Nearby, a street lamp formed a fuzzy ball of yellow in the enveloping murk. And now a figure loomed suddenly beneath it, just as she had materialized so short a time ago under another streetlight. Or was it the same one? Was it she again? Was it he, the one who was following me? Was it real at all? Perhaps it was only a creature of my madness.
My dear sir, you're ill.
I...
Oh, hero, let me help you. Why, you're almost ready to fall.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, just lean on my arm.
Yes. You are real, aren't you?
Real? Huh. I don't understand. I say, you're very near collapse, you know. And I happen to be a doctor. Luckily, too, you're just outside my very house. Come in for a moment, won't you?
Why, you're very kind. Yes, I will, if it's not too much trouble for you.
None at all, my dear chap. Please do.
Within 5 minutes, I was seated in a comfortable chair before a toasting fire, sipping a hot cup of tea. I could feel my nerves relaxing, but the traces of my illness must have been clear on my face, because my host observed...
Your trouble is shell shock, isn't it?
Why, yes, how did you know?
I've been in the service, and I'm a doctor.
Of course, I only meant I'm supposed to be recovered, or almost. But I got lost in the fog, felt ill suddenly. Terrified, you know.
I know. You should never have been out on a night like this. If you've got far to go, you'd better let me put you up.
You're very kind indeed, but I don't want to be any trouble.
No trouble at all. I'd like to be of help. The least we veterans can do for each other. Ah, the blasted war. Thank goodness it's over. Not English, are you?
No, Canadian. I haven't been demobilized yet. I'm still in the Army Hospital at Regent's Park under the care of Dr. Henry.
Ah, yes. Very good man. I'd say he's done well by you. Up till tonight, I mean.
Yes. Of course, we had no idea there would be a fog. I still get in a panic when I feel all alone.
Well, that's usual, but then there was something more than that tonight, wasn't there?
What do you mean?
Simply that you've had rather a severe shock quite recently, haven't you?
How did you know that?
My dear chap, I'm a doctor. My business to know. You were in much too agitated a state when I found you for me to suppose it could have been done simply by the fog. And if I may hazard another guess, I should say it would be a relief to you and wise as well if you could unburden yourself to someone who would understand. Am I not right?
Someone who would understand. That's just it. I doubt if there is anyone like that. It's so incredible.
Oh. The more incredible, the greater your need to tell it. Repression in cases like yours can be dangerous, as you must know. You think you've hidden it, but it bides its time and it comes up later, causing a lot of trouble. Confession, you know. Confession is good for the soul.
Yes, I suppose you are right. But it is so wildly unbelievable.
Since we're strangers, my belief or disbelief can make no difference. And I think I can promise you in advance that I shall believe all you have to say.
Well, but I've got to tell somebody about it soon anyway.
Cigarette to help with telling?
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'd better start back at the very beginning of the adventure then. It started today at the sanitarium. I've been there for some months, and today, when Dr. Henry called to check on me, I knew...
Well, young man, you're as fit as a prize heifer and twice as frisky. The diet here must agree with you.
I have no complaints, Doctor, but if I'm well again, then I'd like to get back into circulation.
Will you listen to him, nurse, rushing things as usual? You'd think he didn't like us here.
Oh, the way he bothers us to let him go into town, I'm sure of it, Doctor. He's getting so healthy, he's bursting at the seams.
There, you see? How about it, Doctor? Can't I just have a day or an evening in town?
What's the great attraction in that dirty place? Some girl, no doubt?
Well, yes, that is in a way. I met her in France. She's a Red Cross girl. She's invited me to stop in for tea if I'm up in London. And, well, it's just that I'd feel human again, seeing a girl having tea, a cigarette, chatting. That's all.
Young man, I not only approve of your day in town, I'm prescribing it. It'll do you good. You've got to start getting used to society again anyway.
And you think I can manage it alone?
Why not? You get around the neighborhood by yourself well enough, don't you? Nothing so very different about London. Certainly nothing to be afraid of.
No, of course not.
Call the young lady and find out the directions, where to get off the underground, what turns to take and so on. Go in the daytime, return before dark. No danger of getting lost. Should be simple. Nothing to it. Do you good.
Then this means I'm getting better. I'll be able to go home soon?
There you go. Rushing things again. But yes, I think perhaps we're on the last leg. Oh, that'll be all, nurse.
Yes, Dr. Henry.
Now, tell me, young man, what about your friends?
No, doctor. I think they've deserted me. I don't see them anymore. No more ghosts. No more dead comrades stopping in for a chat.
Good. For how long now?
Oh, several weeks at least. I can hardly remember when I last saw one.
Thought you saw.
Yes, thought. Of course, in the dark room at night, sometimes the shadows...
That's not quite the same thing. Lots of well people fancy they see the shadows move at night. Especially after they've been reading some Penny Dreadful.
Yes, I suppose so.
At any rate, you can distinguish between the real people and the unreal now. And that's a big step, considering how you were a few months ago.
Well, it's only when I feel completely alone, cut off, that the old panic begins a little, but not as much as before.
Many people don't like to feel alone and cut off, but they can fight down that panicky feeling, nip it in the bud. And so will you in time. But I must warn you, a severe shock could undo all our work. By all means, avoid shock.
Avoid shock, he said. Very funny, isn't it? But who could have known then what would happen? How could I have suspected as I went about planning my day in town, my holiday? I called the girl, arranged our tea party. I was to be at her little house in Morley Place at 4.
Not so easy to find the first time. With your Canadian backwoods instincts, you'll probably manage it better than any Londoner.
Yes, I'm sure I will. It's near South Kensington Station, then.
Exactly. You change at Piccadilly Circus.
Yes?
Without leaving the underground station. And come to South Kent. That's three streets left from there, then two right, one more left, and right again into Morley Place. It's really not far.
Oh, I'll find it, all right. Now, don't go to any great bother.
Oh, you just leave that to me. This is a special occasion, you know. Till 4, then.
Until 4, yes. Thanks. And so it all started out as a cheerful adventure. And everything went well into the city. I made my change underground at Piccadilly, took the local to South Kensington Station. And there I came up at the surface again. And when I walked out, I stepped into a solid, opaque blanket of white fog. I could hear the traffic, the rumble of the city around me. I could hear footsteps, an occasional muffled voice. But I could see almost nothing. This is how a blind man feels, then. The only objects of relief from that dreadful enveloping gray wall were an occasional blur of yellow from a street lamp or a motor car headlight, a glimmering patch from some big lighted shop window here and there, and the figures of other people passing by, dark and floating and indistinct. Or were they people? Might they not be those phantom figures again? Just like the ones that haunted me before I went into the sanitarium. Ghostly, blurred figures of dead comrades from Dunkirk and Abbeville and the mud of Belgium. Ah, here comes another one. I can hear his cane tapping. Look closely now, make sure. There. He looked real enough, didn't he? They are real, I'm positive of it, and I'm not alone. They're all around me. But even as I told myself this, the old panic was growing inside. Here now, old fellow, you've got to get hold of yourself. Next one comes along, speak up. Speak up to him. Ask him the way to Morley Place. Ask, can you put me on the trail to Morley Place? Just like that. You'll see. Here now, here he comes. Ask away. Beg pardon, can you put me on...
I say, is this right to the tube station, do you know? I'm utterly lost. I want South Kensington.
Why, yes, I have just come from there. Straight along, I think.
Oh, thanks, awfully.
Oh, but I say, can you put me on the trail to...
Morley, please. He's gone. Well, no matter, he was real enough. He spoke up like a real person, all right. Maybe the next... Oh, I say, I beg your pardon.
Oh, I am frightfully sorry. I didn't see you and you standing still. Oh,
I'm afraid I must be lost. Can you direct me to Morley, please?
Oh, dear, I think you've missed your turning. You'd have to double back a street and maybe two and take the first turn to the right and go one street and then double back two and then left again and you'll come.
I say, thanks. That was first right and then... She's gone. Disappeared. Like a ghost. The panic was rising in me. They were real people, yes, but they appeared and disappeared so disconcertingly quickly. And when I turned off down the main street, there were fewer of them. I turned again and again. But I couldn't remember the directions. Suddenly, I knew I was lost. And now I was in some little backwater where passers-by were rare, where no one came, where I was alone. Now the panic swept over me. I stumbled on a curb. My cane swept empty air. I fell to the icy pavement. I was shaking so that I couldn't rise to my feet. I crawled across the open space of the street on my hands and knees. Only when I crossed the curb and felt a warm wall could I stand up again. And then I stood there, shaken and frantic. Molly Place must be very close, the little Red Cross girl waiting with her warm fire and hot tea. But where? Where? Suddenly, in the yellow blur of the nearest street lamp, a faint darkening of the fog caught my eye. It was not a figure this time. Only the shadow of the pole, grotesquely magnified. No, it moved. It came toward me. It was a figure, a woman. It came right up to me. Fear gripped me, and then I remembered the doctor's advice.
Don't ignore them. Treat them as real. Speak to them and go with them. You will soon prove their unreality then, and they will leave you.
And so I gripped the wall behind me and spoke to her. Lost your way like myself, haven't you, ma'am? Do you know where we are at all? Morley Place, I'm looking for.
Where am I?
Well, I say you're more frightened than I am. May I help you?
I'm lost. I've lost myself. I can't find my way back.
Same here. I'm terrified of being alone, too. I've had shell shock, you know. Let's go together. We'll find our way together, eh?
Who are you?
Name's O'Reilly, Canadian. I'm going to have tea with a friend in Morley Place. What's your address? Do you know the name of the street here?
I can't find my way home again. Just when I was expecting him to...
I say steady, ma'am.
He may be there now, waiting for me at this very moment, and I can't get back.
Have you any idea of the direction, ma'am? Any at all? We'll go together.
Listen. I hear him calling. I remember.
Wait, ma'am. Wait. Don't leave me here alone. I'm going with you. Wait. She was running fast through the fog. It was all I could do to keep up with her. But I felt I must not lose her or my own nerves would go to pieces. How she found her way in the fog, running so quickly, I didn't know, but I kept close on her heels, running hard. I could smell a faint perfume in the air, trailing behind her. A faintly familiar odor, but not pleasant. And then suddenly she stopped and turned into the gate, so suddenly that I almost bumped into her. Oh, is this in? You found it, then. May I come in with you for a moment? Perhaps you'll let me telephone my doctor.
Doctor?
Yes, Dr. Henry, at the Army Hospital. I'm in his care, you know.
My home is somewhere here. I'm near it. I must get back in time. For him. I must. He's coming to me.
I say, ma'am. But she turned and walked toward the house. For a moment I hesitated. This woman was acting very strangely. But no matter, she was at least real and I needed help. Quickly I followed her up the steps across the porch. The door was ajar. She slipped through and I followed into the dark house. It was so dark inside I couldn't see anything at first. I stopped, groping. But she went on quickly, easily, as if she knew the way. She was ignoring me completely. I heard her steps cross the hall, go up the stairs quickly. I waited and listened. She walked along the hall upstairs.
Where? Oh, where is it? I must find it.
Now the hair on my neck felt as if it were rising. Was she, after all, another of my figures? Was she unreal, too?
Oh, at last, I found it. I'm home again.
I heard her open a door upstairs, go in and close it after her. Then there was silence, profound silence. And I was alone in a dark, unoccupied house. The white-covered furniture in the hallway loomed like ghosts. And there was no sound. I felt my panic coming back. But she was upstairs. And at least she was companionship. I groped my way up the stairs. Along the upstairs hall. There was no sign of life.
Where are you? I want to help you. Which room are you in?
There was no answer. But as I put my hand on a table to steady myself, I felt something. It was a candle stump. With a gasp of relief, I took it up and lighted it. Ah, now I could see a little. One by one, I tried the bedrooms. They were dusty and unused. The furniture covered, the mattresses rolled up on the beds. They were all alike. Until I opened the last door. Instantly, I knew this was it. I smelled the perfume. Only now I recognized it, understood why it was unpleasant to me. It was the smell of a hospital, of chloroform. And there was the woman, her dark fur coat wrapped around her, her jewels just showing at the neck. And she was stretched out on the bed, motionless. Instantly, I knew she was dead. In the next instant, I thought I would go mad. The blood on her face was congealing. Her skin was cold. I knew then that she'd been dead for an hour at least. And that what I saw in the street was not real. This was the shock that Dr. Henry had warned me to avoid.
And what happened then?
Well, I heard the door open up downstairs. Someone came in. The one she'd been expecting, no doubt. And suddenly I realized the danger of my being found there beside a woman who had obviously been murdered. Well, I slipped into another bedroom, and when he went into that room with her, I slipped out and crept downstairs. I stumbled and he heard me, and I came out. I ran down and out into the fog, into the street, and away. How long I ran or where, I don't know. When I was exhausted, I stopped. And then you came and found me. Well, what do you think?
Tall tale, isn't it?
Yes. Strange, but not incredible. I see no reason to disbelieve anything you've told me. Things equally remarkable, equally incredible, happen every day in a big city. I know from personal experience. I could give you many instances.
But the woman, I saw her, and yet she was already dead.
Such things are hard to explain. Perhaps cannot be explained, except, of course, your mind in its present state may still play tricks on you. Perhaps you saw a woman in the fog and followed her. You may have missed her and only thought you saw her go into that house.
But what about the dead woman? She was real enough.
Perhaps, perhaps not. She, too, may have been just fantasy. You may never have left the street.
No. No, I'm sure of that, at least. I must believe it. She was real, and the man who came up the stairs was real. If I didn't believe that, I think I should go mad.
Yes, perhaps that is important. Then, let me see. Have you any proof of what you saw? Something, perhaps, that you carried away with you?
None. But wait. I left something there. My hat. I left it on the bed beside her body. My initials were in it. And so if it was all real, I shall be getting a visit from the police one day soon.
Perhaps.
And then I'll know. And I'll be charged with murder.
I don't think so.
You think the police would believe this fantastic story?
As I told you, many strange things happen in a city like this. For instance, I knew of a similar case many years ago. Strangely similar case. Almost a coincidence. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, I suppose so.
It happened during the last war. A colleague of mine, a surgeon now dead, married a charming girl, young and beautiful. He was wealthy, and they lived comfortably for many years. They seemed happy together. Then came the war, and he went overseas. His income was stopped, of course. The big house closed. His wife found life not so pleasant as before. And somehow she blamed her new hardships on him. You see, she was devoid of imagination, without any power for sacrifice. But she was still young and beautiful. The inevitable young man came along to console her. He was rich. They planned to go off somewhere. Only by chance, the husband came back from overseas suddenly. Just in the nick of time.
Well, he should have let her go. He was well rid of her, I'd say.
Well rid of her, yes. Only he decided to make the riddance final. He decided to kill her and her lover. You see, he loved her. He planned the time and place carefully. They met, he knew, in the big house, now closed. He waited for them there. The plan failed, however, in one important detail. She came at the appointed time, but without her lover. She found death waiting for her. Oh, completely painless death. But the lover did not come. The door had been left open for him. The house was deserted, and it was a foggy night, like tonight. But he did not come. Instead, a stranger came.
Aye. And where was the surgeon all this time?
Waiting outside, concealed in the fog. He saw the man go in, and he followed him to kill him. But the man was a stranger. He came in by chance, like you, to shelter from the fog.
I think that I should...
Why? What is the matter, sir?
Why, I really must be going.
Oh, of course, if you wish.
Thank you for your kindness and hospitality.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, young man. I enjoyed your story, although I confess I expected one a little different. Your coat.
Thank you.
I'll walk with you to the door and give you the directions. Ah, you're in luck. I think the fog's lifting a bit.
Doctor, may I ask, your friend the surgeon, was he ever caught?
Ah, that's the part of the story I don't know. He was clever enough so that I doubt it. Unless he told somebody, made a confession.
I see.
And even so, unless that other person had some proof. Oh, by the way, you can't walk about in the fog without a hat. Here, it's an extra one of mine. You needn't trouble to return.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I went out of his consulting room with a hat on my head. In 10 minutes, I was at the tube station. It was only there that I permitted myself to take off the hat and look at it. It was my own. The hat I had left on the bed beside the dead woman.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight brought you Confession by Algernon Blackwood, adapted for radio by John Dunkel, with Bill Conrad as O'Reilly, Ramsey Hill as the Doctor, and Peggy Weber as the woman in the fog. Music was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Next week...
You are trapped in the dark maze of the native quarter of Mozambique. A dead man at your feet, the police closing in around you. And beside you is a girl with whom you must escape.
Next week, we escape with Percival Gibbon's fast-moving adventure, Second Class Passenger. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when again we offer you Escape. Escape. is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Stay tuned for Robert Young in Father Knows Best. Time now for Father Knows Best. This program first aired in 1950.
Mother, is Maxwell House really the only coffee in the world?
Well, your father says so, and your father knows best.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Brought to you by America's favorite coffee, Maxwell House. The coffee that's always good to the last drop. A decade or so before the turn of the 20th century, the city editor of the New York Sun came up with a remarkably simple definition of news. When a dog bites a man, he said, that is not news because it happens so often. But if a man bites a dog, that is news. Well, in Springfield, in the white frame house on Maple Street, news may very well be in the making. Nothing unusual has happened thus far, but it's quite possible that before the week is out, a man named Anderson will bite a dog like this.
Holy cow, Dad, I couldn't help it.
Bud, when you signed the good driving pledge...
But I wasn't even driving, Dad. The car was just sitting there.
And the fender dropped off all by itself.
Sure.
Bud, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
But it's true, Dad.
I wouldn't be surprised if the whole car fell apart.
Is that so? There's nothing wrong with the car and you know it.
Daddy.
What is it, Kathy?
Did you know that in the polar regions, dogs are the chief means of transportation?
What's that got to do with Bud knocking a fender off the car?
I didn't knock it off, Dad. It fell off.
Bud, unless you're willing to tell me the truth...
Jim, Bud is not in the habit of telling lies, and if he says the fender fell off, then it fell off.
And we put it back on again with wire, Dad. You'd never even know the difference.
Oh, fine. Bud, if I ever find out... Oh, never mind. May I have my coffee, Margaret?
Of course, dear. Here you are.
Thank you.
Nothing.
What?
It doesn't have anything to do with Bud knocking a fender off the car.
I did not.
Wait a minute, Bud. Kathy, what doesn't have anything to do with Bud knocking a fender off the car?
Dogs are the chief means of transportation in the polar regions.
Fine. I'll order a dog sled in the morning. Is that what you want?
Oh, no. I just wanted to tell you.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Silliest thing I've ever heard in my life. That car's practically as good as it was the day we bought it. Might need a little paint here and there.
Daddy.
What is it, Kathy?
Did you know that the dog has been chosen as the companion of man because of his fidelity and intelligence?
Well, I'd heard rumors, but it's nice to have it on such complete authority.
You're welcome.
Dad.
Yes, Bud.
Does that mean that I can't have the car on Thursday anymore?
No, I suppose it'll be all right. But in the future, I wish you'd be a little more careful, that's all.
I wouldn't be surprised if the roof caved in.
Betty, what's gotten into you? Until tonight, the only complaint you ever had about the car was that you didn't get it often enough.
Jim.
Yes, Margaret?
The Liggetts have a new car.
A convertible.
Oh. Well, pardon me.
Dogs are bred for sports, as watchdogs, for guarding and driving sheep, and for plain, ordinary dogs.
Kathy, deep in your obscure little mind...
I'll see who it is.
You stay right where you are. I wanted to get to the bottom of this dissertation on dogs. Bud?
Yes, Dan?
See who's at the door.
Holy cow. You think nobody else around here knew how to open a door.
All right, Kathy. Will you explain something to me as simply as possible? Why this sudden interest in the history of our canine companions?
Huh?
Dogs.
Oh, well, dogs are pets, and everybody says they're man's best friend, and they'd probably be girls' best friends, too. And I don't see why...
Kathy, are you going to start that dog business again?
But everybody I know has a dog, and I don't see why...
You know as well as I that Betty's allergic to dogs. They make her sneeze.
Dad, it's Mr. Davis.
Oh, come on in, Ed.
Hello, Jim. Margaret.
Hello, Ed.
Hello, girls.
Hello, Mr. Davis.
We're just finishing our dinner, Ed. How about a cup of coffee?
Oh, no, thanks, Jim. I just want to talk to you about your dog.
Our what?
Well, I wouldn't mind if it were just an ordinary rosebush, Jim, but this was a Bengal. A genuine hibiscus rosa sinensis.
Ed.
I only had two, and you ought to see the one he dug up. It's a complete wreck.
Ed.
Yes, Jim.
What dog?
Why, your dog.
We don't have a dog, you know that.
Daddy.
Jim. I dislike this whole thing as much as you do, but that bush cost me $13.
Ed, we don't have a dog.
Daddy.
And I wouldn't even know where to get another one. They only had two in town. I bought both of them.
Ed.
Yes, Jim.
We don't have a dog.
Daddy.
Kathy, I'm talking to Mr. Davis.
I know, Daddy, but I want to tell you something.
All right, what is it?
We have a dog.
Fine. Look, Ed, I know how you must feel, but we what?
Kathy, you're joking.
What do you mean, we have a dog?
Well, it was such a poor little dog, Daddy, and it kept following me and following me. And
Kathy, then... you mean we have a dog here?
Uh-huh.
Betty, stop that.
I can't stop it, Father.
You certainly can. Kathy, you've been told 1,000 times not to bring a dog into the house.
Achoo! She's just doing that to be mean.
I am done.
She wasn't sneezing before, and the dog was here all the time.
Where?
What?
Where is it?
Where's what?
The dog.
Oh, the dog.
Kathy, where did you put the dog?
In the playroom.
Well, we'll just see about that.
Of course, it isn't the most valuable rosebush in the world, Jim, but... if you knew the trouble I'd gone through...
Jim, what? Where are you going?
Down to the playroom.
Oh, Daddy, please don't be mean to the little dog. He wouldn't hurt a fly.
Where do you think you're going, Bud?
Well, can I come with you? Gosh, I just want to look at it.
I didn't mean to start all this trouble, Jim, but after all, he did dig up the rosebush.
I know, Ed. I'll be very glad to pay for it as soon as we... Oh! My aching back. Look at the size of that thing.
Holy cow.
I'll just wait for you upstairs, Jim.
Kathy, that isn't a dog. It's a werewolf.
No, it isn't, Daddy. It's a dog, and you're frightening him.
I'm frightening him.
Poor little fella. We're not going to hurt you.
Kathy, get away from him.
But Daddy.
You heard me, Kathy. You don't get away from that dog. Well, stay over there if that's what he wants. But don't get too close.
Jim, Ed Davis said there was a lion in the basement. Did you? Oh, Kathy.
Isn't he cute, Mommy?
Kathy, come over here.
You better do as your mother says, Kathy.
Maybe she better do what the dog says.
Jim, what are we going to do?
We're going to find out where he belongs and get rid of him. That's what we're going to do.
Oh, Daddy, you can't. He's such a beautiful dog, and he's so easy to feed. He all eats his cookies.
Bud. See what the tag says on his collar.
On his collar?
Me?
Oh, he won't hurt you, Bud. Will you, George?
Well, go ahead, Bud. There's nothing to be afraid of.
That's a nice fella. Nice, George.
His name isn't exactly George, Bud. I just call him that.
Oh, you're a great help. Nice boy. That's a nice boy. Atta boy.
What does it say, Bud?
Gargantua the Third.
Oh,
property of Michael Reed, Orchard Avenue.
Orchard Avenue? Well, that's a mile away. How did he get clear over here?
I think he walked.
Well, he can walk right back. Bud, call Mr. Reed and tell him we have his dog.
Oh, Daddy, no!
Oh, Daddy, yes!
Kathleen, it isn't our dog, and we've got to send him back home.
But, Mommy, I love him so.
Oh, don't cry, Kathy. Gosh, you've still got us.
Everybody's got somebody. And all I have is you.
You want me to answer it, Dad?
No, never mind. I'm right here.
Mr. Anderson?
Yes?
I'm Mr. Reed's chauffeur.
Oh, yes. Come on right in. Oh,
thank you. Very nice of you to go to all this trouble.
Oh, it's no trouble at all.
Mr. Reed was quite concerned about Gargantua, quite concerned.
Well, we weren't too happy about him ourselves. Kathy?
You want me, Daddy?
The man is here for the dog.
Gee, well.
She'll have it up here in just a minute. Peculiar looking animal, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's a very valuable dog. Vimarama.
You don't say.
Yes, it's a German hunting dog. Very intelligent.
Well, that's a matter of opinion. Kathy, will you please hurry?
Daddy, I can't find him.
You what?
Oh, Daddy, the most terrible thing happened. He got away.
Kathy.
But he did, Daddy. I just opened the door, and he was gone.
You didn't happen to give him a push.
Oh, Daddy, how can you say... Well, maybe one little push.
Now, see here, Kathleen.
Oh, you don't have to worry, Daddy. I think I can find him again. Later.
I'm awfully sorry about this.
I understand.
Oh, hello, Ed.
Oh, Jim, I don't like
it. Ed, please, I told you I'd get you another rosebush, and I will. First thing in the morning.
I know, Jim, but after all...
George
now...
got away.
Yes, I know he got away. Only he didn't get far enough away.
Have you seen him?
Yes, I've seen him. He's in my backyard, and he's having a wonderful time.
All right, Kathy, go get him.
Gee whiz.
And Jim.
Yes?
When you get that hibiscus sinensis tomorrow, make it 2.
Oh, no.
The dog is a creature whose principal feature is love, and there's nothing can daunt him. He'll stay by your side as though he were tied, especially if you don't want him. A few days have gone by, and in Springfield we find a most unhappy individual. Between roses which cannot be found and a dog which refuses to get lost, Jim Anderson's lot is a miserable one indeed. Like this.
Go on, get him.
Oh, isn't he cute, Daddy? He wants to play.
Well, tell him to play with something else.
But he likes you, Daddy.
All right, I like him, but you don't see me biting his shoes.
Oh, he just wants to be friendly.
No good, Fender. Why don't they make the bolts big enough? They don't want you to fix your car, that's what. Expect you to buy a new one every 5 minutes.
Daddy.
What is it, Kathy?
George is hungry.
George is hungry. George is sleepy. George. Kathy.
Yes, Daddy?
How many times have you found that dog?
6.
And how many times have we sent him home?
6.
Most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Any dog that's stupid enough to get trapped in back of a fence 6 times in a row...
Hi, Jim.
Oh, Ed, come on over here. I've got good news for you.
Okay. See, George is back again.
Yeah, idiotic animal. Comes clear over here from Orchard Avenue and then gets stuck in back of the Willoughby's fence. Smart dog.
He is smart, Daddy. He knows that's where I meet him.
Well, why don't you leave him there? Let somebody else find him for a change.
if he's moved away, there wouldn't be anybody to feed him.
He can always eat rose bushes. Oh, that's what I wanted to tell you, Ed. There they are.
You mean those?
Yep, two Bengals, and I had to go clear to Plainfield to get them.
Jim, I don't like to be difficult, but those aren't Bengals.
They most certainly are. Look at the tags.
Well, I'm going to mark Bengals all right, but... Oh, well, you see, Jim, there are two kinds of Bengals, Hibiscus rosa sinensis and Rosa japonicus. Now, mine were Hibiscus sinensis, and they're a much hardier variety.
Ed, a rose is a rose. And you said Bengals.
I don't like to argue, Jim, but I said Hibiscus sinensis. You see, the japonicus is very susceptible to mildew and thrips.
That's bad, huh?
Oh, yeah, especially around here. The japonicus doesn't do well in Springfield at all. It needs a much milder climate.
I see. You wouldn't consider moving?
But
nothing. I'll keep looking, Ed. After all, what's a few more days? I wouldn't be able to do anything but work, anyway.
Mr. Anderson?
Oh, hello there. We're back here near the garage.
Mr. Anderson, I don't know what to say. Mr. Reed is most apologetic.
Yes, I'm sure he must be.
Well, I'll be getting back to my gardening. I've got another bed of geraniums to set up.
I'm sorry, they weren't the right ones, Ed.
Well, that's all right, Jim. There's no particular hurry, I guess.
Mr. Anderson, I want to assure you that we've done everything in our power to keep Gargantua at home.
I'm sure you have.
I've gone over the fence with a fine-tooth comb. We've fixed everything, and still he gets out.
Maybe the fence isn't high enough.
Well, it's quite high, but we're going to make it higher. And now if I may have the dog.
Yes, Kathy. Now, where the dickens did she go? Kathy!
You want me, Daddy?
Where's George?
George?
No, we call him George. Kathy! Maybe if you called him George, he'd stay home.
Well, it might be a little confusing, but we'll try.
Kathy, why is it... What happened to George?
I don't know, Daddy. Isn't he with you?
No, he isn't with me. Where'd he go?
I don't know.
Kathy, why is it that every time Mr. Reed's chauffeur...
George.
Thank you. Every time George shows up, George... George?
Yes, sir. George.
Oh. Well, why is it every time George shows up, the dog disappears?
I don't know.
What do you know?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, George, but George, Gargantua. George!
Jim!
Ed, is George over there?
He certainly is, and I'm very slowly reaching a point where I don't think it's at all funny.
Ed, he didn't tear up another rosebush.
No.
Well, thank goodness.
This time he got the geraniums.
George dug up the geraniums?
No, but I made a bed, and he's lying in it.
$35 for two miserable little rose bushes. It's criminal, that's what it is.
Jim, let's just be thankful that we were able to find them.
Hibiscus sinensis. Margaret, if I ever see that dog again, so help me...
Jim.
What's the matter?
He's back.
Oh, no. He can't be.
Well, stop the car, Jim. We've got to get him.
Why? Why can't we just pretend that we've never met George? That we've never even heard of him?
Dear, we owe it to Mr. Reed.
Mr. Reed. He's the one who ought to pay for the roses. George is his dog.
Jim, that's not being very charitable.
Well, I don't feel very charitable. Where is he?
Back of the Willoughby's fence.
Again? Margaret, that's the stupidest animal I've ever seen in my life. This is the eighth time he's been stuck in the Willoughby's yard. Any dog with half a brain knows you can jump both ways over a fence. Come here, you silly mongrel.
Oh. Jim, isn't that sweet? He knows us.
Well, why shouldn't he know us? He's been boarding with us for almost a week.
Come on, George. That's a good boy. Take his collar, Jim.
I'd like to wring his neck. Come on, George.
Jim, I don't think you're being very nice to him.
Well, I don't think he's being very nice to us. George, will you please make up your mind? You want to come home with us, or are you going to stay here?
Daddy! Oh, Daddy, you found him again! Oh, George, I'm so happy to see you. wonderful, George.
Kathy, drag that animal over to our house.
Oh, you don't have to drag him, Daddy.
Well, get him over there. And this time, hang on to him.
Okay, Daddy. Come on, George. I'll race you to the garage.
Man's best friend. Intelligent and loyal. A half-witted caterpillar has more intelligence than that George.
Jim, how about the car?
I'll come back for it later. Right now, I'm going to call that Reed guy and give him a piece of my mind. That's what I'm going to do. If he can't learn to take better care of a dog, he doesn't have any business owning one.
Jim, I'm sure Mr. Reed is doing everything he can.
Well, it isn't enough. Owning a dog is a responsibility to the dog and the neighborhood and everybody else. Let a dog run wild that way, first thing you know, he'll be hit by a car. He's liable to be killed.
I thought you didn't like George.
I don't. I mean, well, he's all right, I guess, but they have no business letting him run around the way they do.
Jim, please don't be too abrupt. Mr. Reed is just as concerned about George as we are.
Well, why shouldn't he be? It's his dog. Hello? Oh, this is Jim Anderson. Yes, he's here again. And look, George, I think it's high time... Well, okay. He's coming right over.
Jim, when he gets here, please remember that George isn't responsible for George. After all, he's merely the chauffeur.
Which one?
George. Oh. He told me this morning that Mr. Reed was going to have the entire fence made higher, and if Mr. Reed thinks that much of George...
Hey, just a minute, Margaret. Bud!
You want me, Dad?
Go outside and hang on to George.
Okay.
Betty! Are you in your room?
Yes, Father.
Well, look out the window and keep an eye on George.
Okay.
He won't get away this time if I can help it. Now, what were you saying, Margaret?
Well, I merely said that if Mr. Reed thought that much of George...
Be gods, now what?
I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Anderson.
Well, you should be. Anybody who can't take better care of a nice dog like George...
We do take care of him, Mr. Anderson. We still can't understand how he gets away.
That's a very poor excuse. How would you feel if I... Wait a minute. How did you get over here so fast?
Well, I left the moment I hung up.
I know, but from clear over on Orchard Avenue...
Oh, we haven't lived on Orchard Avenue for almost a week. We moved into the Willoughby house on the corner.
Oh, no.
When you go grocery shopping this weekend, be sure to see the welcome news about coffee in your store. These days, grocers everywhere are featuring Maxwell House coffee at lower prices. Now, all of you who know and love that wonderful good-to-the-last-drop flavor can enjoy it at the lowest price in months. And for you folks who haven't been getting that famous flavor, now's the time to bring home a familiar blue Maxwell House tin. Find out how much more satisfaction, more real pleasure it holds for you. Cup after cup, day after day, you can always count on that Maxwell House flavor. For we'll never compromise on the quality of a single pound. Tomorrow, look for Maxwell House at the lowest prices in months. Now, more than ever, today's coffee buy. Get your money's worth and more with coffee that's always good to the last drop.
Another day has come and gone, and so has the perennial George. There's peace once more in the Anderson household, but we wonder just how long it will last. It never does it? Like this.
Most ridiculous thing that ever happened in my whole life. Stealing a dog out of his own yard. They could have had us arrested.
Father.
Yes, Betty.
Have you noticed how quiet it's gotten around here?
I certainly have. Nice and quiet. How was I supposed to know anybody'd moved in? Why didn't they put up curtains or something?
That George is a pretty smart dog. And what a character. You know what he did yesterday?
Whatever he did, I'm not going to pay for it.
Oh, it wasn't anything like that, Dad. Kathy taught him how to play hide and seek. And he was really hiding.
Good. I hope it's years before anybody finds him.
Why, Jim, you know you miss George as much as any of us.
I do? I miss George?
Margaret, this is the first peaceful moment I've had in almost a week.
Daddy! Daddy! Daddy!
Kathy, what is it? What's wrong?
Oh, Daddy, the most beautiful thing happened. Mr. Reed gave me a reward.
Why, how nice, Kathy.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Well, it was certainly the least he could do. What was the reward, Kathy?
I can borrow George anytime I please.
No.
Isn't it wonderful? Here, George. Oh, my beautiful George.
Hiya, boy.
Hello, George. In lands across the seas, many people still lack the simplest necessities of life. Food is inadequate, clothing scarce. Help is needed from each of us who can send it. The time to send that help is now. The way to send it is through CARE, C-A-R-E. For this is National Care Week, and Americans everywhere are joining in sending food and clothing abroad. To send a 24-pound package, mail $10 to CARE, New York. That's $10 to CARE, New York. Enclose your name and address and the address of the recipient. Delivery is guaranteed. Join in National Care Week now.
Join us again next week when we'll be back with Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson, with Roy Bargy and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and yours truly, Bill Foreman. Don't forget, membership cards for the Robert Young Good Drivers Club are waiting for you at your local NBC station. Get a man-to-man or dad-to-daughter pledge and sign up today. Be a good driver. Get your membership card in the Robert Young Good Drivers Club today. Now, until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's favorite brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. Father Knows Best was transcribed in Hollywood and written by Ed James. Now stay tuned in for Screen Guild Theater, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
Thank you for listening. Tomorrow night, it's Cloak and Dagger, followed by The Jack Benny Show. Thanks to Joel Schoenwell and Paul Stringer for technical support. The executive producer for Theater of the Mind is Moses Neimer. I'm Frank Proctor. Have a great night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.